Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
More Americans are upside down on their car loans, and their credit card debt is at a record high. From the rising costs of just about everything, including cars, to either layoffs or wages that just don't cover the bills, there's a number of reasons why people are racking up debt. So how do we dig out? We asked Here and Now listeners to share what questions you have about paying down debt. Here with more context and advice is our personal finance pal, Jill Schlesinger. She's a CBS News business analyst and host of Jill on Money. Hi, Jill.
Hello.
So let's jump right in. Can you give us a broad picture of the context here? Why are so many people not keeping up with credit card payments and auto loans?
You know, during the pandemic, we saved a lot of money. And then as we started to see the economy open up, a lot of those savings were spent. People then were spending on things they really needed, goods, things like cars to get to work, services started to cost more, and we ate through our savings, and many people actually ended up borrowing money either through a credit card or an auto loan or a personal loan to finance some of their post-pandemic lives.
Yeah, and then costs really went up as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, everything was going up.
Yeah. So let's delve into some questions on credit card debt from our listeners. We're going to start with Joseph Cole, who is in Las Vegas, Nevada.
My wife and I were in credit card debt for several years before we decided to declare bankruptcy and get rid of the nearly $90,000 we had in credit card, auto loan, and other unsecured debts. We're looking to buy a house in the next 18 months, and it's been about a year since our loans were dissolved through the bankruptcy. I'm just asking, what would our next steps be to help our credit recover post-bankruptcy to make the home buying experience as smooth as possible and to open up any opportunities we may not have if we don't start that process now? Thank you.
Okay, and thank you, Joseph. So, Jill, what's your advice? How can Joseph and his family work on healing their credit so that they can be in a position to buy a house?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen in a year unless there's a lot of family help or money coming from another source, because it's going to be hard to qualify for a mortgage. So one of the ways that you can restore your credit worthiness is to use something called a secured credit card. It's sort of a combination of, say, like almost like a prepaid credit card, essentially. You give the company $500, they send you a credit card, and it just sort of credits against this bill. And, you know, the reality is that it seems like a little bit of theatrics to show that you can give them $500 up front and then pay your bills. But the reality is it is a way to create a credit record. Debit cards don't do it. And unless there is another installment loan out there, this is one of the quicker ways to start to get your credit built up. I would not actually suspect that they will be able to qualify for an affordable mortgage rate for another 3 years.
Well, that's a good strategy right there. Let's go next to Erin Bennett, who's in Irvine, California, and she has just under $10,000 in credit card debt that she's built up over the last 2 years of traveling after the pandemic.
My biggest question is, if I have opened credit cards in the past and I don't, you know, necessarily use them all the time, is it bad on my credit to have open trade lines, I think they call it, without activity or with zero balances? Does that look bad?
You know, I've wondered that myself, Jill. So what's your take on Erin's situation of having multiple credit cards open, even if she doesn't really use them?
The weird thing is the way your credit score is actually determined, it is not so much how much credit that you have outstanding, but it's also the amount of credit you could tap into and what percentage of that credit you are using, the availability of that credit. Now, the weird thing in credit in Erin's case may be, when I tell you this, you're going to say, what? Erin, don't close out any of your credit cards. You can stick these cards in the back of a drawer. You don't need to have any activity on them. When you actually close down your credit cards and cancel them, it can actually work against your credit score.
Really?
So you can have them, don't use them, and don't close them until you have restored the credit card balances to zero, and then figure out the ones you want to use. You can cut them up, but don't worry about canceling them.
Okay, so let's stay in California. And listener Victoria Yee, she's around the corner from me here in Oakland, and she says she has more than $18,000 in credit card debt and has been working on paying it down for the last 10 years or so.
My question is, I'm right now in a battle with a certain department store company regarding late fees and interest that they charged me because they didn't see a bunch of payments I made, and they're refusing to reverse those fees. Who can I contact to try and get them to take the fees away or at least work with me, because they're being very stubborn about it?
So Jill, you know, payment disputes, not uncommon. What would you recommend for Victoria, and how easily is it to sort out these kinds of disagreements?
You know, first of all, they're difficult, and she's doing the first most important thing, which is contacting the vendor themselves and saying, can you release this? Can you not? Now, if they're not going to, and she's going to the Better Business Bureau, that's possible. I would also try something called the National Consumer Assistance Plan. It was launched like in 2015, I think, and it was a way to actually have any credit reporting disputes adjudicated. And the three credit reporting companies usually will have stricter rules about the accuracy of the data that they collect. So I would try that. It may actually be helpful. And of course, annoyingly, just the persistence is probably going to be the best thing that she can do.
Yeah. Victoria, good luck. I'm also going to read a question now from a listener, Carla Parsons in Harrington, Maine. And Carla's a mail carrier who listens to us every day on her route. She's carrying $50,000 in medical-related credit card debt because she's had to pay out of pocket for two expensive surgeries for her adult daughter after an accident. And she asks, if we are able to bail out banks, why can't we instill a cap on credit card interest rates? At the very least, why not instill a cap on interest rates charged for medical expenses? It's a good question, Jill, because we know that at least three major credit bureaus have decided that medical debt under $500 will no longer stay on your credit report. So that's one speck of good news. But what would you say to Carla about the idea of lowering interest rates on medical debt?
You know, I think that would be a wonderful idea. I actually think that the bigger issue is that all of the structure of credit card debt has really felt the pressure of the lobbying effort of these companies. And, you know, I thought that maybe after the financial crisis in 2008, 2009, that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau would sort of take that up. But, you know, part of the problem of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau in this iteration and where we are now a decade on since it started is that it has somewhat been watered down a bit. And so there is no answer for Carla except to say that there is perhaps a possibility that she might explore talking to an attorney, because like our first listener who said that they declared bankruptcy and they had all their debt released, you know, sometimes the bankruptcy courts are actually a good place to go. Mm. You know, the issue okay. It really is what else you have to lose if you go that route.
Okay, and finally we have Vincent DeGruy of Fort Worth, Texas. He's a construction worker who listens all the time in Texas. Hey, Vincent. And he tells us he has more than $25,000 in credit card debt. He's been working to pay it down for 20 years. Here's his question.
Setting aside moral arguments about the righteousness of paying your debts, realistically, looking at the dollars, and I have to choose every week whether to spend my money on retirement or spend it on paying off debt. Why should I pay off all that debt instead of just claiming bankruptcy?
So Jill, how would you answer that?
You know, I think this is sort of like the Carla question before, which is, you know, I think that we make terrible moral judgments about people. Businesses do this all the time. They declare bankruptcy to release the pressure on the business. We don't allow that for individuals. This is what the bankruptcy court is actually for, which is to say, I can't get out from under this $25,000 credit card debt. And Vince and I would actually talk to a bankruptcy attorney and see what your options are. You know, there's a process. It's not fun to go through bankruptcy because, as we heard earlier, that when you go through bankruptcy, you can't get credit. So But presuming you don't need it to borrow money, bankruptcy might be a good option for you.
Okay. And I want to just ask you, in finishing up, you know, I think there's a stigma around carrying debt, you know, whether it's through a missed car payment or on your credit cards. We don't really talk about it much. Is it important to talk about debt, you know, more publicly and also to have a public conversation about either erasing it or preventing it to begin with?
I think it's more about making sure that people understand the terms under which they are borrowing money. And so I think that, you know, if people are going through a medical issue, it doesn't matter how much education we give, they're going to borrow the money. There's an issue. I have a medical thing. It's an emergency. I'm going to borrow the money. But I do think that it would be better for us as a society to not judge why other people get into debt. And sure, it would be great for us to all like, oh, yes, we live in, you know, within our means. That's wonderful. But life happens, and this
life
is usually
happens.
Yes, and it's usually not that someone's really done something stupid. It's really that something bad has happened to that person, and this was the only alternative.
Life happens, folks. Good words to leave us on. Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst and host of Jill on Money. Jill, thank you.
Thank you.